information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care. Appear to border on shows.
The law?
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
He did not watch TV. He disliked the news. He didn't listen to political radio. He didn't take sides. He wasn't on the left. He wasn't on the right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 201 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, it never ends. Arizona assassinations and the left-right griefapalooza. Toxic towers, teachable moments in miraculous events, police state international and geopolitical mayhem, insolvent income, good clean fun, and the great game. All that and so much more is here, episode 201. It's Friday the 14th, January 2011, and this is MediaMonarchy.com.
We have the MAC-10 11.
I'll shoot the MAC-10.
We have the AK-47S.
I'll shoot the MAC-10.
We have a 12-gauge skeet shotgun.
I'll shoot the MAC-10.
You make it look easy.
You engage 10 targets alternately, close to far, in 90 seconds. You have 30 seconds to load and make ready. Stand by.
With the Mac 1011, nobody gets away today from the spray of a burst of a 30-round box magazine. Is a clean little unit, only weighs 8 pounds in a big 10 inches. Highly efficient with a rapid rate of fire at 1100 rounds per minute. Don't move, don't blink, don't laugh, it'll cut you in half. It's the killer machine, a 9mm big, nice balance, compact, real easy to conceal, and it sells real well. All the way to Argentina, Israel, Yugoslavia, murder corporated from New York to Detroit, all the way to the hood.
I'll shoot the Mac 10.
That feels better.
Doesn't that feel better?
I enjoy it.
On the ass, nigga, the cane, packing the Mac, hitting the fool, whipping a tool, death fool, black on black. Can't shoot, can't aim, when the pain overfed, lost your head, now a little kid shot dead. A toy soldier in the army of juvenile drug lords, sweating young kids like a pedophile, 12 years old, sneaking the Mac in school, talking about you need protection, cool, baby, real cool. Sticking the Mac in the back of an old man and taking all that he can of what he could have took by hand. Shot, pop, kids drop, he didn't mean it, we seen it, and he seen us, the Mac has turned into his penis. Taking the bed, giving a nice and gentle caress, the back on, says yes, it puts a S up on his chest. Load the clip, now you're hitting, now you're a man. Don't flip, stop tripping, because your heart is in your hand.
I'll show you what it does.
Let's see that again.
I'll shoot the Mac 10.
But you might need to use it right here, right now. In your own backyard, better shoot the gale. Because I just passed a pretty bill of patents in the government. Just don't get it. There's a war on here. Everybody's for a beer. Let's go out and get some beer. Shoot some beer or a clear or a nigga or a do. You know it's
enjoy it.
I'll show you what it does.
Let's see that again.
Shoot the Mac 10. 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 I'll shoot the Mac 10. Shoot the Mac 10.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 201 from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It's Friday the 14th, January 2011, and we are coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, all the fine affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, Patriot Radio in La Mesa, Texas, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, KBOO.info, Radio23.org, and of course, TragedyAndHope.com. You can get in touch with me in any of your favorite social bell and whistle portals, like FriendFace, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, Podomatic. You can send emails, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Get active or get radioactive. Instant Messenger, Skype, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. All of those are reachable with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And of course, you can send media to the monarchy. P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. And, of course, that P.O. Box address, as well as the email, as well as all those other links, are available at the top right of the page of MediaMonarchy.com. We want to remind you, if you find independent, commercial-free, alternative news and media valuable and enriching to you, please support alternative media and help us go and grow, such as my man Steven in Utah, the latest donor to Media Monarchy. Down to the last couple copies of 2020 Hindsight, the exclusive DVD from TragedyAndHope.com. And when we run out of those, we will swap it out with the newly released 2009 video archive from my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. I believe that takes care of all our news. And again, my friends, so much to go over. Unfortunately, never a dull moment. And there's going to be very, very much to go over on this episode 201. Last week was all mass animal die-offs and the mysterious death of John P. Wheeler III, as well as all the other related sundry updates that we get for you here on MediaMonarchy.com. Welcome to new listeners, and of course, a hearty welcome to returning listeners and the growing band of folks who dig Media Monarchy and who help get the word out about this show, and I think this show is unlike any other you'll find out there. Not saying it's the best, I'm saying it's unlike. So let's just dive right into it and glance at Google News. Tunisia declares a state of emergency, and we could see that building, and we are going to cover the situation in Tunisia coming up on this episode. Funeral begins for judge killed in Tucson rampage. Judge John Roll, perhaps the hidden angle in this Arizona assassination story. And we also have food price jumps protested in the aforementioned Tunisia, as well as Algeria and Morocco. And we discussed rising food prices worldwide on our previous episode, 200B, where we went over all the latest from my sister site's cyberspacewar.com and foodworldorder.com. We'll leave the news open so we can track anything going down in the New World Order. And as I tell folks, sometimes it's a massive buildup in the pre-production for trying to put this show together for you live. And then, of course, even the post-production and the upload and all of that. So generally, once it hits Friday evening and Saturday, I try and take a little break. But, of course, there was no break. The ratcheting up of events seems to happen continuously and at a breakneck pace. And what we try and say, and perhaps what we don't point out here often enough, is that so much of this is a psychological war, a psychological operation, a war on consciousness. We're all being built up to tear each other apart along phony divisions. The little stupid differences are nothing compared to the big stupid similarities. But we've been engineered to tear each other apart. Our regular people, brothers and sisters, we're all around the world just trying to get by. Unfortunately, most nations have been hijacked by a self-imposed, self-anointed elite with their burden of running the world for us. But I digress. Such was the case with last week's mass animal die-offs. And when we have these massive news events, so much to go over, and there's no way I can go into every bit of minutia, and it's also difficult to find one article or one bit of text that kind of crystallizes such a massive situation, such as it was last week with the animal die-offs and the murder of John Wheeler, such as this week with the Arizona assassination story. So my post goes back to last Saturday. And the text posted to Media Monarchy is from a Paul Joseph Watson article fairly early in what would slowly unfold, slowly and sometimes quickly unfold in this case. So let's just take the text and we'll take it from there. Arizona assassin obsessed with mind control. Jared Loughner. That's L-O-U-G-H-N-E-R. Even sometimes referred to or pronounced as Loner. Jared Loughner, the gunman who shot Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and numerous other victims, including a federal judge and a 9-year-old girl during a political event in Tucson last Saturday, January 8th, was a U.S. military recruit who was obsessed with mind control, mirroring the circumstances of many other mass shooters in history. Loughner's YouTube channel contains several rambling text-based videos which discuss his fascination with mind control. In one of his online rants, Loughner said that he was, quote, a United States military recruit at MEPS in Phoenix, end quote. Reports suggest that he also may have been deployed to Afghanistan at one point. The mission of UMEPCOM and the Phoenix MEPS is to process individuals for enlistment or induction into the armed services, end quote, states the website of the United States Military Entrance Processing Command. The fact that Loughner was part of the U.S. military and yet was being characterized as an anti-government conspiracy nutcase by the establishment media is a complete contradiction. Loughner's multitude of viewpoints seem to transcend political classification. Watching his YouTube videos, he's clearly a schizophrenic who is obsessed with mind control and other bizarre left-field issues of minutia. Loughner's vulnerable and psychotic profile, combined with his interest in mind control, mirrors other famous assassins such as Mark David Chapman, John Hinckley, and of course, Columbine killers Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. And that was my post originally. Meanwhile, collecting up the mass amounts of related media spilling out. and hopefully, which has kind of become the case more recently and most recently here on Media Monarchy, is that we just have time to go over the headlines. And of course, I've massaged the headlines to hopefully give as much info as possible in a short amount of time, but hopefully this isn't a bad thing. Hopefully, as the show has grown and I spin more plates, I hope we're not losing the thread. And if that becomes the case, and if it is the case, and I just haven't realized it yet, we'll put the brakes on. I know when I've looked back at some of the really early episodes of this radio show, we maybe only went over 10 or 12 articles in a two-hour episode. We've gotten to the point now where we're probably going over nearing hundreds of articles and stories in a two-hour episode. So again, the way I do these and put this all together, there's no real mystery to it. Subscribe to feeds and subscribe to words and stories and searches that are in your area of interest. Save those and start to put them together and write blurbs and post them up and save PDFs of the articles you use. So, as I was saying, we're going to read these headlines into the record, stopping periodically. And like I said, there was no one other great article to get us really up to date on all of these areas. But as you can see, the mugshot that came out in the days after this massacre a deranged individual. There's no doubt about it. So here are our massive updates to the Arizona assassination story. Loeffner held without bail. More on that from Weasel Zipper. Weaselzippers.us. Ted and Jared. Unabomber and Moussaoui lawyer Judy Clark to represent Loeffner. Preliminary hearing coming up on January 24th. So the connections between individuals like Zacharias Moussaoui or Ted Kaczynski, which, if not last week, then the week before, we discussed the article written by Ted's brother called Ted and the CIA, asking if his brother was a Manchurian candidate in the first sentence. So when you see these characters come out of the woodwork, and they only seem to deal with the biggest cases, and to those of us in the skeptical alternative media, the cases fraught with the most problems and holes, and the only conspiracy theories are those coming from the official mouthpieces, so you have to watch when you see these people being appointed to certain situations in certain positions, whether that's people like John Kerry or John D. Rockefeller IV or Ramsey Clark, or in this case, Judy Clark. Are they related? I'm not actually sure. But nothing would surprise us. Frightening twisted shrine in Arizona killer's yard from the New York Daily News. You may as well have Oswald standing back there holding copies of The Worker and whatever other political magazine that didn't actually jive with the other he was holding, but nonetheless. Gifford shooting captured on surveillance video. I'm not aware if any of that has been released or if anyone's seen anything about it. That's from the Wall Street Journal. But an article that starts to get into some of the mysterious and suspicious and perhaps sinister angles to this story, we mentioned federal judge John Roll. Was he the real target of the assassination? Was he a threat to the Obama agenda? Another article from Sorcha Fall that, of course, as always, would link back to the Kremlin. A Foreign Intelligence Service report circulating in the Kremlin states that the top U.S. federal judge for the state of Arizona was assassinated barely 72 hours after he made a critical ruling against the Obama administration's plans to begin the confiscation of their citizens' private retirement and banking accounts in order to stave off their nation's imminent economic collapse, and after having the U.S. Marshals protecting him removed. According to this report, federal judge John McCarthy Roll was the chief judge for the United States District Court of the District of Arizona, who this past Friday issued what's called a preliminary ruling in a case titled United States of America versus $333,520 in United States currency et al., wherein he stated he was preparing to rule against Obama's power to seize American citizens' money without clear and convincing evidence of a crime being committed. Is that the case? Is this a smokescreen and the human interest angle is for Giffords when John Roll was the real target? One of Loeffner's victims, the 9-year-old girl, as you have probably no doubt heard by now, was a 9/11 baby, a face of hope. And my man Clyde Lewis pointed this out. And it was the first place I heard and saw it pointed out, is that she was born on 9/11/01 and died on 1/09/11. I'm not necessarily saying I always believe in the numerology, but there's no doubt that there are those out there who do. And we see these memes weave their way through all of these stories that we cover week in, week out. And again, they are a psychological operation. It is a war on your consciousness. But if we continue all of these updates related to Arizona assassinations, an interesting note that perhaps we should end this coverage on, but let's put it right up at the top. The father of the aforementioned girl, the 9/11 baby, Green, on the television news, speaking against the reflexive call for fewer liberties, victim's father is against further restrictions of freedom.
John, how do you explain something like this to your little boy?
Well, you know, we haven't started doing that. My son's interested in hunting and in guns in general. He's got Nerf guns and things like that. The only thing I did say is that, you see what happens. And you try to solve problems with guns. You can't solve problems with guns. There's always going to be more problems. You know, this is such a random act. I don't want to raise alarm to such a rare thing to happen in Tucson, Arizona, which is a wonderful city, and the Northwest side is a wonderful community. But it shows that it can happen anywhere, and that's, I think, Christina. You know, she was born on 9/11, the day the towers came down in New York City. And he left us this tragic day. But everything in the middle was beautiful. We had 9 beautiful years with her. I know she wouldn't want things to change. She would not want restrictions. I saw what happened to our lives, specifically because I travel quite a bit. After 9/11, travel became a nightmare. We don't need any more restrictions on our society.
And there you have it. From one of the victim's fathers. And that is what Glenn Greenwald refers to in another fantastic piece, The Reflexive Call for Fewer Liberties. And And then, as the stories so often do, it started to fall apart. Of course, this was being painted along our partisan, ridiculous, phony left-right paradigm political lines. This guy was obviously a Tea Party racist crazy person, right? That all started to fall apart once people who knew Jared Loughner began to speak, and once the information was fleshed out, or at least was announced to the rest of us somewhat. And what's that bombshell? The fact that it's quite the opposite. Jared Loughner has been called very liberal.
Fox News has just obtained a memo that details possible links between the accused shooter and at least one anti-government and anti-Semitic group. James Rosen joins me now. He's following this breaking news for us in Washington. Jared Loughner is going to make his first court appearance. We just want to remind everybody that's going to happen moments from now. We will get you to that as soon as it comes in. James, what are we learning about this young man?
Martha, good morning. We know that Loughner will be appearing via secure video link from his detention cell for this court appearance. It's a somewhat unusual method. We don't know exactly which court he will be appearing in. He's in FBI custody. He is awaiting arraignment. It is possible that Loughner will face both federal and state charges in this case. Federal murder charges could subject him, after any conviction, to the death penalty. At the same time, authorities are on the hunt for a second suspect in this case, and they have released this still photograph taken from a routine surveillance video of this man. He is described as a white man in his 40s or early 50s, wearing a blue jacket and blue jeans. Officials have been vague about why they believe a second individual may have been involved in the shootings, but they're asking anyone who knows who that individual in that photograph might be to contact the authorities, Martha.
Yeah, James, Fox got his hands on some intelligence from DHS that has a little bit more information about what they're learning about this young man and a connection that he may have with a group known as AMREN. What can you tell us about that?
Now, this is all breaking in just the last hour. Fox News obtained this DHS memo obtained by my colleague, our Pentagon correspondent, Jennifer Griffin. This memo was intended as a summary of the known facts of this case at about 6 p.m. last night. It gave us our first indication, for example, that Jared Loughner's mother works for the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Now, the DHS memo says that where Loughner's possible motive for his alleged crimes might be concerned, quote, strong suspicion is being directed at a group called American Renaissance. Suspect is possibly linked to this group, the memo says, through videos posted on his MySpace and YouTube account. The memo goes on to say the group's ideology is anti-government, anti-immigration, anti-ZOG, which is a reference to Zionist occupational government, and anti-Semitic, unquote. Now, we have some more breaking news here, Martha. I just got off the phone with Jared Taylor, the Yale-educated founder of American Renaissance. The group is unabashedly preoccupied with race and the alleged genetic differences between the races. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups in America, describes American Renaissance as a self-styled think tank that promotes pseudoscientific studies and research that purport to show the inferiority of blacks to whites. Well, Mr. Taylor says he had never heard of Loughner until yesterday. Quote, that is complete nonsense. I have absolutely no idea what DHS is talking about. We have never used the term ZOG. We have never thought in those terms. Mr. Taylor adds, if this is the level of research we're getting from DHS, then heaven help us. One last note here, Martha. American Renaissance says it has checked its subscriber list going back 20 years and the attendee rolls at its events, and they have no record of Jared Loughner ever subscribing to their publications or attending those events.
All right, good information, James. Thank you for that. We'll see why their name showed up in this internal document and what information or evidence they may have at DHS on this young man. James, thank you very much.
Now, that clip didn't exactly explicate Jared Loughner being very liberal. That was the DHS attempting to connect him to American Renaissance. However, they did mention, of course, the second shooter. I believe that story's now been dismissed, but we'll return to it as we still continue down through all these massive related updates to Arizona assassinations. Loughner, described by a classmate as left-wing pothead. Liberal smear machine backfires after gunman found to be occultist, pot-smoking left-winger. Media already prepared for violence in Tucson. These previous stories all coming from InfoWars, and we'll get to the right-leaning stance of some of that when we reach the end of this posting. But another fascinating angle to this, explored by my man Jeffrey Long at redactednews.blogspot.com. The changing stories. Doctor says Giffords likely shot in front of head, not back. We have an accompanying video that you have to check out for yourself, where it's repeatedly said, make no mistake, Giffords shot in the head by a mystery bullet. Lauren Coleman, the author and coiner of the phrase in the book, Copycat Effect, gets into the Loeffner case. And then we bring in the drugs. Arizona shooter was on powerful hallucinogens. Possibly salvia, which I believe we've referenced in our Drug Wars area on Media Monarchy. It remains to be seen whether the big pharma psychotropic drugs will be involved, but inevitably they will be. As I'm sure we will find out more and more about this story as the days and weeks go on. Natural health news getting into the top 10 drugs for violence. And a little bit more about fluoride, which again we already reported to you on the previous B-side episode. And all the Food World Order updates. But this story's gone away, and I believe it's now said that this was just a cab driver. There is no second gunman.
Police in Arizona have released a photograph of someone they're calling a person of interest following the shooting of U.S. Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. The attack on Saturday killed six people and left another 12 wounded in the city of Tucson. A man in custody suspected of carrying out the violence has been named as Jared Lee Loeffner. Gabrielle Giffords, a rising star of the Democratic Party, was shot in the head as she met constituents outside a supermarket. County Sheriff Clarence Dufnik thinks the attacker may have had an accomplice.
There's some reason to believe that he came to this location with another individual.
This man was pictured at the scene of the attack, and officers are appealing for help in finding him. Meanwhile, Congresswoman Giffords remains in a critical condition after emergency surgery to save her life. In Washington, the American flag has been lowered to half-mast as fellow lawmakers pray for their wounded colleague.
Now, even if he was the cab driver, that doesn't exclude him from possibly being some type of handler. Second man sought in Giffords' shooting may be assassin's handler, telling him at the appropriate time, why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire? Now, as if this whole charade wasn't, and not to make light of death and destruction, but as if this whole story wasn't already tailor-made for the phony left-right paradigm of people who have NPR on in the background or people who have Fox News on in the background. I like the Jets. I like the Patriots. Fake partisanship that gets us nowhere except constantly fighting against each other while the elites and gangsters and banksters get away with it yet again. But as if this story wasn't already proceeding like it was following some kind of script, now we bring in even more of the crazy conspiracy theorist angle. Was the documentary Zeitgeist the gas on Jared Loeffner's fire?
In Saturday's attack, and the speculation Loeffner may have been fueled by partisan politics and rhetoric in the media?
He did not watch TV. He disliked the news. He didn't listen to political radio. He didn't take sides. He wasn't on the left. He wasn't on the right.
Instead, he points to this online documentary series called Zeitgeist as the gas on Loeffner's fire. It's a documentary movement that rails on currency-based economics.
I really think that this Zeitgeist documentary had a profound impact upon Jared Loeffner's mindset and how he viewed the world that he lives in.
Eventually, Jared's bizarre behavior drove Osler away. That was 2 years ago.
I forgot about Jared. I stopped thinking about this kid because thinking about him wasn't something I wanted to do.
Corporate media portrays Loeffner as a gold and silver advocate being pushed by Bill Maher. And what they don't mention about Zeitgeist, in addition to railing against the economic system, they also debunk religion and the 9/11 conspiracy theory. That would be the official conspiracy theory. So, not to get into what media outlet is good and what alternative news site is bad and who's an agent and who's selling anti-Christ New Age religion. I don't get into attacking other alternative media hosts. I can leave it up to myself and I can leave it up to you guys because you're all smart enough to figure out what's good and what's bad.
I heard a clip my man Ian played for me from one of this week's episodes of Democracy Now, where they had, of course, Mark Potok on from the SPLC. So tolerant. Southern Poverty Law Center, out of court, the hate pimps. And he basically ran down the laundry list of things. You know, he's probably against, you know, the Federal Reserve and the elites that run things and their eugenics agenda to kill people. And, like, yeah. But, of course, someone like this is no more represented by the NRA or the Tea Party or any of that garbage than he would also be by left-wing media, which, of course, he would have leaned towards. Very liberal, they say. Meanwhile, Arizona shootings trigger surge in Glock sales amid fear of ban. That's from Bloomberg, and the guy who ran the gun shop called it. They stocked up ahead of time, and they were right. And they're selling hundreds percentage-wise over what they typically would have. And it gets stranger and stranger, my friends. Gabrielle Giffords' YouTube account was shown to be subscribed to two other channels. One was to Representative Ike Skelton. The other was to Jared Loeffner's channel. There are videos about this, and there are screen grabs. Of course, the channel isn't that way anymore. The question is, somebody just did this after the shooting. But who? Who has access to the YouTube account? I haven't figured all these things out, and again, too much to get into every bit of minutia with this week's insane PSYOP conspiracy. An interesting note posted on the SF Bay Craigslist, noting Loeffner was programmed to kill by the Army, even including some specifics. And again, we mentioned see something, say something. Loeffner bought his bullets at Walmart. He was turned away at one and successful at another. And again, we reference Walmart and their partnership with Homeland Security, playing the PSAs to report. ZenGardner.com on Before It's News gets into five sinister reasons for the Tucson massacre. An excellent article that goes over the broad range of connections to, again, a massive psychological operation such as this. Meanwhile, DHS advises Congress on dealing with an active shooter. More on that, of course, from NationalTerrorAlert.com. Meanwhile, Hillary compares the Gifford shooting to 9/11. And again, back to the fake left-right, toning down the rhetoric. There was a nice video, but of course YouTube squashed it, of screen grabs from Twitter feeds from all kinds of leftists wishing violent death on Sarah Palin. A phony on the other phony political side. But she does get a reaction out of a lot of people, and as we say, those smarter than us ahead of us coined it. The real action is in the reaction. Problem, reaction, solution. Meanwhile, the Washington Post concedes, of course, that Loeffner acted on mental illness, not phony political rhetoric. And our own Oregonian asking the interesting question, what if the Arizona shooter had been a Muslim? Connecting, of course, our recent FBI patsy event of Mohammed, the Portland tree bomber. And we tie in more religious memes as... What I was saying, this story is tailor-made because it contains all the elements needed to rabble and rattle the cages of all levels of the Western world. You want to follow the Twitter, YouTube angle? You can go that way. You want to follow the left-right Palin garbage? You can go that way. You want to look at the so-called religious angles. Wounded Arizona congresswoman had recently strengthened her Jewish identity. That's from CNN. Meanwhile, Obama at the Grieffapalooza Memorial calls for civility. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. But meanwhile, in a related story, leading evangelical halts his civility project due to lack of interest. We're not interested in being civil. We're filled with anger, and we want revenge. Angry about what? Well, we're not exactly sure. Revenge on who? Whoever. What do you got this week? Change the channel. I'm sick of this show. So, Palin gets into it even more when she uses the term blood libel. And the Belief blog on CNN, which I've been following more and more for our Holy Hexes segments, Palin's use of blood libel, the phrase blood libel, invokes ancient myth about Jews giving up their life for Gentile. More on that from BeliefNet.com. Palin v. Giffords, blood libel. Meanwhile, Democrats planning a bill that would outlaw threats to lawmakers, as if it wasn't illegal to threaten people, but he wants to do it. You can't use symbols. They're all about the symbols, and this is the way these things work. Op-Ed News has an exclusive interview with Gifford's rabbi debunking rumors that they knew Jared Loughner. And in eulogizing the Tucson victims, has Obama become our pastor-in-chief? Does he feel our pain like our previous phony progressive puppet from the 90s? And we don't have Billy Graham anymore. We have the Obama-Siah. Where in the Griefapalooza, he noted, and we, of course, have links to all the other text and speech and all of those things for you, but a quote from HomelandSecurityWatch.com from Obama's Griefapalooza: bad things happen, and we must guard against simple explanations in the aftermath. Couldn't have said it better myself, Barry. Meanwhile, Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com, putting it quite plainly, Obama uses the dead for political gain in staged psychological operation. And that's what we're experiencing. A late addition to this post from Siva Tuva, who you may recall we interviewed recently on the mystery of the dead birds and fish and other sinister forces. She has a data dump collection on the shootings in Tucson, Arizona, and perhaps their connections to, like so many other events, the 33rd parallel, such as the Arkansas die-offs, such as the assassination of John F. Kennedy, such as on and on. Now, at the end of this post, I'm in for a little anonymous wrist slap, where a comment notes, I'd been liking the posts here until this one. The headline links are blatantly written by right-wingers, which I admitted to you earlier, a lot of them do come from InfoWars, and yes, they are more on the reactionary right side of this fake scheme, with the presumed intent of making this a right-left issue. I hold a lot of liberal ideas sacred, but I'm not blind to heavy-handed rhetoric. Someone hasn't studied the trivium. Or worse, they're using it to manipulate. Tisk, tisk. Now, obviously, many people haven't studied the trivium, and if that comment is towards me, then I have to take that. I haven't studied the lost tools of learning as much as I should that give you the tools to break down a lot of these stories. Grammar, logic, rhetoric. And I, of course, not using it to manipulate. And again, even if those things are pointed at me. I can take being taken to task for things that I already know and admit about the site and show and the shortcomings of the things that I try and do with MediaMonarchy.com. But I'm not going to let it get me down. I'm only going to use it as positive and hopeful, you know, constructive criticism. So, my friends, that brings to a close all our coverage on the Arizona assassinations. And, of course, I'm sure we'll have to return to this story as we'll learn more about it in the days and weeks to come. And in situations like this, just as we said last week, referring to the mass animal die-offs, we always have to wonder if there's not something larger going on and we're being misdirected by the magician twirling the baton to misdirect our eyes to pay attention to some sideshow while maybe the real deal's going down elsewhere. Whether or not that's the case, I'm not sure, my friends. We're going to shift gears now and get into police state updates. And, of course, it's all related. It's all relative. Police state updates. This is only a test. Thriller author recruited by the Department of Homeland Security to dream up terror attacks for the Red Cell program, horrified at how easy it is to attack the U.S. Brad Meltzer writes, I was a real-life secret agent. I didn't have the hand grenade cufflinks or the poison dart pin, but in 2004 I was recruited by the Department of Homeland Security for its Red Cell program. As they described it, and as the Washington Post later reported, Red Cell was the government's way of trying to anticipate how terrorists would next attack the United States. To do that, the government brought together what they called out-of-the-box thinkers. As a novelist who writes thrillers with scenes that take place in the underground tunnel below the White House, I was somehow identified as one of those thinkers. Sometimes I was paired with a psychologist or a philosopher. Sometimes I was contacted alone via email and given a target to attack. I'm not allowed to tell you what the targets were or where they were, but I can say that we'd destroy major cities like my hometown, New York, in minutes. And when I went home at night, I felt horrified because I saw how easy it was to kill us. But what inspired me more than anything were the other people sitting next to me in that room. Sure, there were real heroes, members of the FBI and CIA, who helped us with vital facts. But then there were far more professors and transportation employees, musicians and software programmers, regular people whose names will never be known and whom you'll never hear about. Let me be clear, those unseen heroes are everywhere, and they help us every day. And it was at that point in the article that I realized he's shilling for Homeland Security, dreaming up terror events, and realizing just how simple it is. Because, of course, that puts to lie the whole war of terror security charade. It's impossible to be safe all the time. Bad things, unfortunately, are going to happen. Those who give up essential liberty for temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. So I think what goes wrong right quite well with dreaming up terror attacks reminds me of course, the lone gunman and Chris Carter and the tales that Dean Haglin told about intelligence agents picking up story ideas, planting story ideas among the holy wood. But it's just a drill. Navy held security training drill at Port Canaveral in Florida. More on that from CF13.com. And we see the events of homegrown errorism grow and grow and grow. Copycat effect. Spiraling out. Package ignites at D.C. postal facility day after a similar scare in Maryland, which we reported for you on last week's episode 200. Package shuts down California bank. That's from BioPrepWatch.com. Man arrested for allegedly threatening Washington Democratic Representative Jim McDermott. That's from the Wall Street Journal. Man arrested in threats to Colorado Democratic Senator Bennett. That's Michael Bennett and his staffers. More on that from the Denver Post. Again from BioPrepWatch.com and digging into a little history mystery. Soldier finally speaks on his Fort Detrick anthrax infection from 50 years ago. Whoops. And to bring it to the present, false rumors swirl about anthrax in Tide. That would be the detergent. That would also, of course, be from BioPrepWatch.com. And I suppose what I try and do with these stories is, again, I can't go over every single angle or post every single story, because that would just lead us to the point of having too much information that we couldn't make any sense of, and we're already teetering on that edge as we are anyway. But we try and find stories that help shed a light and shine a light, that great disinfectant, the kind of stories that really expose the games going on. Man admits he lied to the FBI to frame his associates as terrorists. This from the New York Post. A man who lied to the FBI to frame several associates as terrorists pleaded guilty Thursday to making false statements to officials. Syed Omer Ali, 25, of Queens, admitted that he contacted the FBI last May to alert them to an effort underway to launch a terror attack against New York City with the help of radical operatives based in Pakistan. Ali falsely told agents that these associates had ties with the tribal guys back in Karachi and were planning to travel there and to be trained in insurgency tactics and then return to New York to commit a terror strike. He also admitted to misleading the FBI by telling agents that one of the associates had discussed attacking Times Square since it would likely inflict the greatest number of casualties. Informants lying about the war of terror. It's a game now. It's the only growth industry we have. Be a snitch for the state. And I suppose it's been a little while since we've had a disgusting story centered on our unfortunate schools, which are failing on purpose. All you got to do is go look at the work of John Taylor Gatto and others on purpose. That's the point, and that's the question most folks have to get to at some point when they see everything crumbling all around them on any level that you want to talk about, food or money or jobs or any of those things. Is this happening on purpose? New Jersey Town's Board of Education to vote on random drug tests for middle school students.
It's a proposal that is raising some eyebrows. Random drug testing of middle school students at a school in New Jersey. But are the kids just too young? CBS2's Christine Sloan has the story.
A lot of changes happened around 1500 BC.
These students at Belvedere Elementary School may soon add drug testing to their list of lessons. This week, the Board of Education will vote on a plan to randomly test 6th, 7th, and 8th graders to see if they're under the influence of drugs.
We're hoping that the students, if they're at, say, a party or someone's house or just hanging out somewhere, that they'll say, I don't want to get involved in drinking or using any drug because tomorrow could be a drug testing day.
The program is voluntary. Both students and parents have to sign up for it. What's important to note, school officials say if a kid tests positive, that kid won't be suspended and information won't be turned over to police.
I think it's a good idea.
We spoke to a lot of parents and students in this close-knit town, and surprisingly, the majority told us they would be signing up.
It takes the pressure off of them that they have an easy out to say, no, I don't want to do this. I'm afraid I'll be tested.
Students who test positive would get counseling or even be referred to a rehab facility. At Belvedere High School, drug testing is mandatory for students who park on campus, join clubs, or play athletics.
It's been working well.
I don't think it's to really punish kids as much as to let them realize like what they're doing and the effects it has on their life.
That's what the district says it wants to convey to students. It's not about punishment, but getting kids who may be experimenting with drugs help. In Belvedere, New Jersey, Christine Sloan, CBS 2 News.
And the Board of Education vote there in Belvedere is set for Wednesday night. School administrators say they are confident the proposal will pass.
Of course they're confident the proposal will pass. They wouldn't have announced it if they weren't assured it was already going to pass. Randomly drug testing your children, but of course, as of now, it's voluntary. For now. Let's continue with the rest of our police state updates. Ex-CIA official Philip Giraldi calls the Patriot Act what it is, a Nazi law. More on that from Press TV. Meanwhile, Raw Story reporting, Congress quietly preparing to renew Patriot Act. Representative Mike Rogers, Republican from Michigan, has introduced a little-noticed bill that intends to once again renew controversial provisions of the Bush administration's USA Patriot Act that are due to expire this year. When the act was first signed into law, Congress put in some sunset provisions to quiet those concerns of civil libertarians, but they were ignored by successive extensions. Unfortunately, those concerns proved to be well-founded, and a 2008 Justice Department report confirmed that the FBI regularly abused their ability to obtain personal records of Americans without a warrant. The only real sign of strong opposition to the act was in 2005 when a Democratic threat to filibuster its first renewal was overcome by Senate Republicans. Since this new bill, introduced by Rogers on January 5th, was virtually identical to the extension passed last year, its passage was seen as likely. And the flashback for that story goes back to December of 2004 with an article from Paul Joseph Watson. Sourcing to Al Martin Raw, as well as Conspiracy Planet, with a story that I could find or see no any kind of documentation to, but I'd heard it said and repeated many, many times, and then that's why you have to go check things out and see if anything shakes out. Ex-Stasi spy chief Marcus Wolf hired by Homeland Security. MARKUSWOLF, ex-Stasi spy chief Marcus Wolf, was he hired by Homeland Security? And our last note on these police state updates from ComputerWorld.com, Real ID Alive and Kicking, a controversial 2005 bill designed to create a national standard for driver's licenses, may not quite be as dead in the water as many might have assumed, according to a report released this week by the Center for Immigration Studies. The report, authored by Janice Kephart, Director of National Security Policy at the CIS, offers an update on the implementation status of the Real ID Act in each state. It's one of the first comprehensive looks at the effort since 2009, when broad concerns over real ID requirements led to calls for its repeal and resulted in Congress's failed attempt to pass a watered-down alternative called the PASS Act. The PASS Act. It's like a dream act. We move from police state international to get our geopolitical mayhem as we see at the top of Google News as we speak, Friday the 14th, January 2011, Tunisian president leaves country amid unrest. We were getting into this story just a few days ago on MediaMonarchy.com, mayhem spreads in Tunisia as curfew decreed. So this will give the backstory, and we do have a clip for you to hopefully shed light on things that are going on around the world. As, of course, even folks like Morrissey have noted, America is not the world. The government of Tunisia scrambled alternately to appease and to crush growing unrest on Wednesday as a three-week-old wave of violent demonstrations spread for the first time to the capital, where swarms of protesters called for the ouster of the authoritarian president Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. The protesters came together after circulating calls to rally over online networks like Facebook and Twitter. Many were unemployed college graduates, and they angrily demanded more jobs and denounced what they called the self-enrichment of Tunisia's ruling family. Army units and riot police were deployed around the city and around dawn in anticipation, and they quickly dispersed protesters with billy clubs, tear gas, and bullets. But late in the day, the government decreed a nighttime curfew, and there were reports that some relatives of the president were already leaving the country for their own safety. At one of the several demonstrations, witnesses reported that the security forces had shot and killed four protesters. Some said the army had used rooftop snipers to fire on the crowd. Rights groups said they had confirmed more than 30 deaths before the day began, all in skirmishes with police over the last several days. How can you fire on your own people? Asked a 30-year-old business owner taking refuge from police as they broke up a protest near the French embassy and train station downtown. If you do that, then there is no return. Now you are a killer. That 30-year-old business owner taking refuge from police as they broke up a protest near the French embassy declined to provide his name for fear of reprisals. The update we have posted already for you from the BBC a few days ago, already caving to the pressure, Tunisian president will not seek a new term. But now we see, again, my friends, being reported 40 minutes ago from trustworthy outlets like Voice of America and Financial Times, Tunisian president leaves country amid unrest. mayhem spreads in Tunisia as riots rage, curfew is decreed, and the president flees the country.
Believed to be from Saturday night, these images from the city of Tala, a rare glimpse of the growing unrest. A month after it began, the clashes between police and protesters have become increasingly deadly. With an effective news blackout in place, Al Jazeera has been unable to verify exactly where or when these videos were recorded. But it's claimed these are the victims of the violence. Three men killed in clashes with police in the western city of Kasserine. This video is claimed to show the burnt-out offices of the ruling party in the city. And in the nearby city of Feriana, another office of the ruling party is set alight. Protesters angry at the lack of jobs and investment. The government says police have only used force when necessary and have only opened fire after warning shots failed to stop crowds attacking government buildings.
The police opened fire in legitimate self-defense, and this led to 2 dead and 8 wounded, as well as several wounded among police, 3 of them seriously.
In the town of Sidi Bourgoui, where protests began in December, more clouds of tear gas on Saturday. This clip is believed to show the gas canisters used by police against the protesters. The label on the canister, the voice claims, says it should only be used against animals or during war. More protests too in neighbouring Algeria on Saturday, after 4 straight days of rioting. The government met protesters' demands by slashing the cost of some basic food items. But these men are claimed to be the victims of Saturday's violence, shot dead after police were accused of firing live rounds into the crowd.
Well, there are so many reasons for those problems, but I think mainly is the kind of unequal distribution of wealth. This wealth is spoiled by corruption, by bad governance, and lack of accountability of government officials and state civil servants.
With tight media controls in place and troops deployed to protect public buildings, the Tunisian government is hoping it can stop the unrest from spreading further. There are fears each protest his death will just add to their growing sense of anger.
This is the direct message Tunisia's youth want to send to President Zain al-Abidine Ben Ali. Mr. President, people only want to live, and their voices are not heard. Go to the street and see with your eyes. And that frustration has found its voice on Tunisia's streets. The government has responded, beefing up the police presence and deploying the army to maintain control. Unconfirmed reports say 14 civilians have been killed in clashes in the past 24 hours. Protesters say the police used live ammunition to quash a protest in at least one town. For the first time in a country where media is tightly controlled, state television has taken notice, blighting images of what they call vandalism by protesters. The government claims a sinister agenda is behind the protests, but at the same time is taking notice.
The message has been received by the government and all political channels. With the backing of the president, we have already put in place urgent measures and allocated $5 billion for the development of various towns, including those on the borders and the center of the country.
It's been nearly 3 weeks since protests against unemployment began in the central Sidi Bouzid region. And just as they soon spread to the capital Tunis, so has the cause of the protesters. Where it was once about lack of job opportunities for young people, now they are speaking out against what they call police and state repression. Rapper Hamada Ben Amour, known as The General, was arrested last week after he released the song online. But as more take to the streets and others spread the message and the pictures online, the protests may prove increasingly difficult to contain. Khadija Magadi, Al Jazeera.
And there you have it, my friends. The situation in Tunisia seems to mirror situations around the globe. As again, we look at the breaking news, Tunisian president leaves country amid unrest. And again, we see all these countries, regardless of where they are around the world, all reacting to elites stealing their resources. Let's get our related geopolitical updates posted at the bottom of this story about mayhem spreads in Tunisia. Hezbollah and its allies topple Lebanon government. More on that from the Washington Post. Haiti's earthquake anniversary, the one-year anniversary of the massive quake in Haiti, marked with prayers and concerns. More on that from BeliefNet. And the griot asking the question, where did all the Haiti relief money go? And what do we say to that? Just send your cash. Activist says Haiti controlled by foreign governments and foreign interests. That sounds like what I just said. But we moved from Tunisia to Haiti. And we reported on the massive cholera outbreaks, of course, sourced back to the Blue Helmets. Our last note of related geopolitical mayhem goes to the Washington Post. Ahead of Chinese president's visit, that's right, coming next week, Obamasiah will bow down to the paymaster. I should have included the link to that Saturday Night Live skit from a year or so ago where president of China comes and tells Obamasiah how it goes and who owns who. Ahead of Chinese president's visit, U.S. and China trade criticism on economic issues. And we have little tiny Tim Geithner with a basketball on his way to a court in Beijing. That's a file photo. With Chinese President Hu Jintao's state visit with President Obama less than a week away, officials from both countries have been making carefully crafted remarks apparently intended to put pressure on the other side. So far, the comments have avoided sensitive topics such as the military tension on the Korean Peninsula and those pesky human rights, which are usually discussed behind closed doors, and have focused mostly on economic issues. The quote-unquote debate began on Wednesday when Treasury Secretary Timothy F. Geithner, speaking at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, said that the undervaluation of the renminbi, also known as the yuan, is not a tenable policy for China or for the world economy. Look who's talking. That closes all our geopolitical mayhem and sets the stage for everything else. Good God. Tiny Tim setting the stage for our EconoCrash updates. But we're going to take a quick break and listen to, as long as we're talking China, the first track from the soundtrack to an amazing film that I watched recently streaming on Netflix. And again, we'll remind you, coming very soon from MediaMonarchy.com and TragedyAndHope.com, NavigatingNetflix.com, there's a film called Code 46. I believe I mentioned it on the show before. It's got Samantha Morton and Tim Robbins, and it's essentially Brave New World Order Gattaca. I love the composer for this score, a guy named David Holmes. He's done film scores for Steven Soderbergh and has even made his own electronic albums. So let's listen to Shanghai from David Holmes from the soundtrack to Code 46 on MediaMonarchy.com. from the soundtrack to the film Code 46. That was the music of David Holmes, and that track was called Shanghai, which is going to be quite fitting for the table we already set with the upcoming visit from our paymaster. Ladies and gentlemen, we're well into hour number two of this 201st episode for Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, coming to you live, as always, every Friday from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, thanks to the fine affiliates like ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, and all the other fantastic stations. That break wasn't nearly long enough, and as was just noted in the chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com, God, you gotta love dystopian synth music. But yes, we set the table before that dystopian synth music break to go into our first story we covered on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, our weekly video series with CorbettReport.com. Geithner says U.S. insolvent. This from LouRockwell.com. The U.S. government is insolvent. Who says so? Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury. Geithner sent a letter to Congress on January 6th asking for the debt limit to be raised. If it is not raised, he warned, the U.S. will default on its debt. In his words, quote, never in our history has Congress failed to increase the debt limit when necessary. Failure to raise the limit would precipitate a default by the United States. He didn't say that the government will be inconvenienced. He didn't say that the government would be forced to muddle through by delaying payments, raising taxes, and cutting non-obligatory programs and services. He said the government will default. This means that the government doesn't have enough cash to pay its obligations to the many and sundry persons whom it owes cash unless Congress authorizes an issue of even more debt. And hell, why not? It's all coming from the creature from Jekyll Island. It's all money as debt made out of thin air. And we can really flesh it out with all our related econocrash updates from NPR. The Federal Reserve becomes the most profitable bank in U.S. history. The Financial Times, that aforementioned mouthpiece to the elites, reports that the financial crisis has helped the U.S. Federal Reserve become the most profitable bank in history. According to the Fed, it turned an $80.9 billion with a B profit in 2010. $76.2 billion of that came from securities the Fed bought during the financial crisis. The bank sent $78.4 billion of that profit to the U.S. Treasury. The Financial Times explains that the Fed sends most of its profit to the Treasury instead of recapitalizing itself. And there's always the possibility these profits won't hold up in the future. From anti-fascist calling, Alan Stanford, someone we have not really reported on very extensively here. And again, like so many of these cases, sometimes we focus on individual events and sometimes we don't get into them. But they all have their own laundry list of sinister forces. Alan Stanford's trial has been indefinitely delayed because the suspected CIA banker has become drug dependent while in federal custody. The strange case of accused swindler and suspected CIA banker R. Alan Stanford became a whole lot stranger last week. During a preliminary hearing in Houston, U.S. District Judge David Hittner ruled that Stanford, charged with orchestrating an $8 billion Ponzi scheme that defrauded thousands of investors, cannot be tried until he undergoes detoxification for a drug addiction required after his incarceration in a federal detention facility. Talk about a convenient turn of events. Quote, nothing can be done until the medical aspect is cleared up, end quote, Hittner told defense lawyers and prosecutors during an all-day hearing that examined Stanford's mental competence to stand trial, Bloomberg News reported. The banker's court-appointed defense team is seeking a 2-year delay citing the mountain of evidence, some 2 million pages at last count, they must review before the trial can proceed. Stanford's apparent inability to participate in his own defense would certainly complicate matters. With a net worth once estimated at $2 billion, the accused fraudster was declared indigent last fall after his assets were seized and known accounts frozen following his 2009 arrest and indictment. That coming from Anti-Fascist Calling, and more fantastic work from Tom Burkhart. And then we move to allgov.com, where taxes go up for lowest income Americans. Surprise, surprise. It turns out that the great tax compromise hammered out between Obamasiah and congressional Republicans will not prevent taxes from going up for many Americans, mainly low income earners. An analysis of the tax bill by the Urban Institute Brookings Tax Policy Center shows that 67% of individuals in the lowest earning group will pay more this year in taxes. That would be the 20% who earn less than $18,000 a year. The source of the tax hike lies with the government's decision to replace the Making Work Pay tax credit in 2010 with a 2% reduction in the payroll tax rate in 2010. This change could have been designed in a way that avoided an increase for most low-wage workers. That's low-wage workers, as we've already noted, they're becoming high-rage workers. And I don't think I need to continue. You get the point. Everybody knows the dice are loaded. And we move to Reuters. U.S. 2010 home foreclosures top 1 million for the first time. Banks seized more than a million U.S. homes in 1 year for the first time last year, despite a slowdown in the last few months as questions around foreclosure processing arose, a leading firm said on Thursday. Banks foreclosed on 69,847 properties in December alone, bringing the year's total to 1.05 million, topping the prior record of the previous year to that. Again, money to wage wars of aggression abroad based on lies. State of the art of warfare. And those are all our related EconoCrash updates posted to the bottom of our Geithner Says U.S. Insolvent post. So now we turn, for the remainder of this 201st episode from MediaMonarchy.com, for everyone's favorite, it's the News Purge, the January 13th News Purge, good clean fun for the whole damn family, which we heard in our intro song from Emergency Broadcast Network, of course their landmark 1995 record. Telecommunication breakdown had a huge effect on me, and I use a lot of the bits from that album as some of my imaging and music beds and bumpers and all the channel changing and things that I've grabbed from there and remixed and added to. But again, it's been such a source of so many things, that album from Emergency Broadcast Network. And I recall it was the last album I bought before I moved away to college in 95. Just turning 18, and that album, which is landmark and has become quite the cult classic, is notable on many levels, but one for being pretty much the first enhanced multimedia CD release. It even came with a 3-inch floppy disk and had interactive videos that you could remix on the fly, and it was just amazing. Some of you may remember them for tagging along with U2 on their Zoo TV tour as an opening band, and their We Will Rock You Poppy Bush remix, again going back to the early 90s when we were saying goodbye to Poppy Bush and saying hello to Rhodes Scholar drug runner Clinton. And yet I digress, my friends. Let's begin this January 13th News Purge, good clean fun for the whole damn family, with 9/11 updates, with an amazing piece posted to 911blogger.com, backup communication system was miraculously switched on for exercise mode on September 10th. A special military backup network that allows communications between government and military agencies to continue during emergencies was miraculously switched on the day before 9/11, and so was already operational when the terrorist attacks in New York and at the Pentagon took place. The Special Routing Arrangement Service, SRAS, was, for reasons unknown, turned on for exercise mode on September 10th, 2001, and was therefore ready to be utilized the following day when there was a national emergency like that for which it was intended. The SRAS is the responsibility of a little-known government agency called the National Communications System, NCS, which works to keep critical telecommunications functioning during emergencies and played a crucial role in the government's response to the 9/11 attacks, helping to maintain and restore communications networks. Furthermore, the SRAS is related to continuity of government, a plan that was activated for the first time during the attacks. Brenton Green, the director of the NCS on 9/11, told the 9/11 Commission that on 9/10, quote, miraculously, the SRAS system was turned on for exercise mode and thus it was ready to function on 9/11, end quote. Therefore, when the NCS was required to assist the government's response to the terrorist attacks, quote, SRAS was already in exercise mode and operational. The SRAS supports the highly secret continuity of government COG plan, which is intended to keep the government functioning in the event of an attack on the U.S. The NCS's involvement in COG was one of the agency's three main programs. As Green told the 9/11 Commission, quote, the main communication systems of the country must be kept going or no one can communicate, end quote. The SRAS provides, quote, a vehicle for continuity of operations by providing survivable communications linkages to federal and defense end users over the public network, end quote, according to a Department of Homeland Security publication. Apparently describing the SRAS, Green told the 9/11 Commission, quote, there's a separate network linking the National Coordinating Center and the major carriers and networks as a backup. The National Coordinating Center in Arlington, Virginia, is the operational arm of the NCS. This network proved its value as a separate link on 9/11 because it coordinated network use between network operation centers while the telecommunications network was saturated. Furthermore, again apparently describing the SRAS, Green said, quote, in the situation where continuity of government is put into play, as was the case on September 11th, there is a communication system where no one can trace the site of the call on the other end. So the question, was the NCS involved in a training exercise on 9/11? Green apparently did not tell the 9/11 Commission why the SRAS was turned on for exercise mode on September 10th, but a possible explanation that needs to be investigated is that the NCS was scheduled to participate in a training exercise on September 11th. We know that the NCS was, in 2001, part of the Department of Defense, and several U.S. military agencies are known to have been conducting exercises on the morning of 9/11. For example, NORAD was running its annual exercise, Vigilant Guardian, and STRATCOM was holding its annual exercise, Global Guardian. Might the NCS have been participating in one of these or another exercise? Furthermore, it's worth noting that beginning at 8 a.m. on 9/11, representatives from the CIA gave a briefing to the NCS at a secure facility outside of Washington, D.C., where they discussed the threat that international terrorists posed to America's telecommunications infrastructure. Along with Brenton Green, the briefing was attended by representatives from seven other federal agencies and more than 40 tech and communications companies. The private sector representatives were all, quote, senior executives from their respected companies and all had government security clearances that granted them access to the most sensitive intelligence data, end quote, relating to threats to the nation's telecommunications infrastructure, according to journalist and author Dan Verton. Topics discussed during the briefing included the growing terrorist threat to telecommunications infrastructure, the information warfare capabilities of foreign nations, and the possibility of a strategic cyber attack on critical U.S. infrastructures committed by a foreign nation or terrorist group. considering that the NCS's special routing arrangement service had been switched on for exercise mode the previous day, and considering the topics that were discussed, might this briefing have been an introduction for a training exercise, perhaps preparing participants for a scenario based around a simulated attack against the telecommunications network? Continuity of government was activated for the first time on 9/11. This is something that folks like Peter Dale Scott have done so much great work on. COG. But as we continue this story, that as we've already gone on this far, should probably be continued. Continuity of government is a program dating back to the Cold War, which aims to ensure that the government will continue to function in the event of an attack on the United States. During the 80s, it prepared for a possible nuclear attack by the Soviet Union, but during the 90s, it focused instead on the possibility of a terrorist attack in the U.S. Considering that the SRAS supports COG by providing survivable communications linkages to federal and defense end users, it's worth noting that sophisticated communications methods have played an important role in the continuity of government program. In the 1980s, for example, much of its budget and hundreds of millions of dollars was spent on advanced communications equipment that would enable the teams involved in continuity of government to have secure conversations with U.S. military commanders, according to journalist and author James Mann. Furthermore, three of the program's key players during the 80s and 90s held critical positions in the U.S. government on 9/11. Those individuals, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and Richard Clark, were the Vice President, Secretary of Defense, and White House Counterterrorism Advisor, respectively, when the attacks occurred. David Addington, Cheney's legal counsel in 2001, was also involved in the COG program. It's also notable that continuity of government was activated, apparently for the first time during the 9/11 attacks. Richard Clark had said that he gave the order to activate it apparently at around 9:45 a.m. on 9/11 or shortly after. He told ABC News, quote, "On the morning of 9/11, the entire continuity of government program was activated. Every federal agency was ordered to activate an alternative command post, an alternative headquarters outside of Washington, D.C., and to staff it as soon as possible." Considering that the SRAS is intended to support the COG program, it was convenient, to say the least, that it was already operational on 9/11 and therefore immediately ready to be utilized by those involved with COG when the plan was activated. National Communications System and their critical response. Government agencies experienced communications problems on 9/11 are the further sections in this article that, again, goes on, and I would like to continue it, but I believe I've already laid out quite a bit for you, my friends, for an angle of this story that we, prior to this, I was unaware. Backup communication system miraculously on and ready on 9/11. Switched on exercise mode. Our other related 9/11 update is, again, we're just diving into the Jan 13 news purge. Good, clean, fun. Deutsche's toxic tower is finally coming down. You can get more on that from ABC News. And isn't it always interesting to note that buildings closer to towers 1 and 2 didn't fall, but buildings further away, such as building what? Fell down inexplicably. So, in addition to all the toxic things Deutsche Bank has already brought us, their toxic tower is finally coming down, my friend, as we are reaching the 10th anniversary of the catalyzing catastrophic event that is the blank check for everything we see now in the intervening years. Bush or Obama make no difference whatsoever. The international elite and their agenda rolls forward because, unfortunately, we keep falling for it. And that's why we're trying to use this alternative media to spread this kind of information out there while we can. Continuing down the news purge, we get to BioWars and EnviroHealth, where we find that there are, in addition to everything we covered last week on the mystery of the bird and fish mass die-off. So we have more reports of mass die-offs. Birds fall from sky in California. Thousands of dead fish found in Chicago. And you can learn more about that everywhere from InfoWars to Huffington Post. We do supply the flashback for you of what we covered last week, the mystery of dead birds and fish and other weird events, and our interview with Siva Tuva. But more explanations have come, and perhaps we did mention this last week in covering our mass die-off coverage and all the related stories that make my head spin just thinking about it, and even reminds me now that I was talking about this to a coworker who initially hadn't heard of it, but then once we got into it, oh yeah, I did hear about that. An old lady chimed in next to us and said, I heard about that. I don't believe that excuse about it being fireworks or any of that garbage. Those are the kind of things that give me more positive hope that young and old, black, white, male, female, all around people, I believe, when that spark is lit, when something kicks their butt and makes them get activated and realize what's going down isn't an accident and it ain't going to get better by accident. But we may have reported in our massive coverage last week, Earth's magnetic pole shift unleashing poisonous space clouds linked to mysterious bird deaths. I know that sounds crazy, but more on naturalnews.com. You may remember hearing the story about how an airport had to rearrange their runways and repaint their numbers. That was in Tampa. The Earth's magnetic pole is shifting. Earth changes are coming. Now they're going to try and blame it on you as part of the eugenics agenda because you dare to use the filthy, disgusting things they've forced down our throats, meanwhile shelving all the better, higher tech, cleaner, more sustainable inventions. They are going to blame the coming Earth changes and the solar events and solar cycle 24 and all of the things that are somewhat naturally occurring are going to be exploited. Meanwhile, all the other events caused by our misleaders and multi-generational serial killers, the poison in the water, the poison in the food, the poison on the television, the poison in Congress, those things won't be addressed. Pitting us against each other in defense of the environment would, in the words of the elites themselves, fit the bill. Furthermore, we note that weather control is no myth. Here's just another one to add to the pile. Scientists engineer thunderstorms over Abu Dhabi. We reported the first off the top of my head in this kind of scenario is in the lead up to the Olympics in China. They were running cloud seeding and what seemed to be rudimentary geoengineering, but this is the weather war. If we couldn't control the weather, then why did nations sign agreements saying they wouldn't use the technology to change the weather? And isn't it funny how things are connected? Show me that smile again. Kirk Cameron says the dead birds aren't the end of the world.
Kirk, there's a lot of chatter out there on the internet about these thousands of birds and fish dying. Some people saying this is a sign of the end of days. You obviously starred in a series of films based on the idea of the Left Behind series. When you hear that, what do you think?
Well, I first think that they ought to call a veterinarian, not me. You know, I'm not the religious conspiracy theorist go-to guy particularly, but I think it's really kind of silly to try to equate birds falling out of the sky with some kind of an end times theory.
But it is interesting, the notion of end of times and the whole Left Behind series, which deals with Jesus coming back to take his people to heaven with believers and non-believers. Why do you think there's such fascination in that? And when something like this happens, people kind of turn to those thoughts.
Well, it seems to be that people have a real fascination with the mystery of end time predictions. Of course, people get all excited about Nostradamus prophecies, 2012, And of course, biblical prophecy has really been a topic of fascination for thousands of years. So I think people are trying to, they love to find codes and signs of future events and see if they can decipher them before anybody else. But birds falling from the sky, that has more to do, I think, with pagan mythology and the way and the directions that the birds flew told some of the followers of those legends that the gods were either pleased or displeased with them. But I think people just have a fascination with the religiously mysterious.
Doing the series, which were hugely popular, did it change your faith at all? Did it change the way you thought about the idea of the end times or your reading of the Bible in any way?
Well, I've been a Christian for about 20 years, and certainly there are fascinating passages in the Bible talking about the return of Christ, and people are trying to pinpoint those in a chronology of events. But you know what it made me think about was just the fact that I'm probably going to die of some other cause before this happens. A friend of mine just died yesterday, and what I thought about mostly was the fact that life is short, and I need to be ready whenever it is that God decides to end my life here on earth. And to me, that's the key.
You have a new movie called Monumental, which is going to be probably coming out later this year. And it's interesting because it seems very timely. I mean, it's very concerned about where America is right now and what you see as a problem in America.
Well, you know, I have six kids, Anderson, and I am very concerned about their future in our country. And I look at it and I think, man, if America is a ship, it looks a lot like it's sinking financially, morally, spiritually. It's frightening. And it seems that everyone, religiously, in business and in politics, is playing the blame game, and I want answers. So I decided to go on a journey and retrace the escape route of the pilgrims. They left us clues to get us back to the real treasure of America and get the ship righted again. And I'm very excited about what I've discovered, and I want to unveil it in a documentary this fall called Monumental.
I look forward to it. Kirk, I appreciate you being on. Thank you.
Don't waste another minute of your crying. Who would have thought, my friends, that perhaps the most measured, reasonable thing we would hear from anyone on this episode would come from Kirk Cameron? And he did even say right there in the beginning, it's like, well, what was the first thing you would say? Well, I would say call a veterinarian, because I'm not the go-to religious conspiracy theory guy. Now, our few other related bits from allgov.com. 17 other things that have fallen from the sky. That is quite interesting. Everything from, Let's just run down the list as long as we're here. Meat, the famous Kentucky meat shower. We also had fish. We had money. We've had human waste. We've had mysterious documents, a human body, hay, a 3,902-pound stone, silver coins, Judas tree seeds, ice chunks, deadly white powder, non-dairy creamer, space junk, the largest known iron meteorite, toads, and last but not least, thousands of birds. Like toad falls, mass bird falls, although not common, are certainly well recorded. For example, hundreds of birds fell onto the street of Baton Rouge, Louisiana in July 1896. In another Louisiana incident on March 20th, 1941, hundreds of blackbirds suddenly landed on Barksdale Air Force Base. 17 things that have fallen from the sky. Meanwhile, more disturbingly around the world, this from grist.org on the deep water and the devastating floods of Brisbane. Now, this next one, should we have reported it on Food World Order? Four Loko will now fuel cars, not mayhem. And a couple of notes about my two states. First, my present state of Oregon and the Umatilla Depot to increase weapons destruction rate. That is, of course, from bioprepwatch.com, and we have been following the destruction rate at Umatilla for quite some time here on MediaMonarchy.com. Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, from my beloved home state of West Virginia, a little bit of good news for a state that could always use some good news. Again, from grist.org, EPA blows up industry's plan to blow up a mountaintop in West Virginia. Our last note of BioWars and ViroHealth updates on this news purge from endoftheamericandream.com. 8 conspiracy theories about health that the mainstream media has been forced to admit are actually true. Now, this comes from a good site, and there is kind of a collection of sites that have been doing good work and seemingly came out of nowhere. I guess I'm not sure if it's such a good thing that all their articles are 8 conspiracy theories about health that the mainstream media has been forced to admit are actually true, or 25 events that show the economy is crashing. It's all very list-oriented. Now, perhaps that makes it easier for other folks to get into, and if that's the case, then I'm all for it. I just don't want it to turn into the sort of USA Todayization of the alternative media. But having said all that, let's look at endoftheamericandream.com and their 8 conspiracy theories about health that, of course, the mainstream media has had to admit are true. And the first one, we already reported for you. This first one we reported to you on the B-Side episode 200 just a little bit ago on foodworldorder.com. High levels of fluoride in our drinking water is bad. Number 2, once we allow genetically modified crops to be used, they would spread everywhere. Number 3, there are pharmaceutical drugs and cancer-causing chemicals in our drinking water. Number 4, cell phones are linked to cancer. Number 5, bisphenol A, BPA, is linked to male infertility. Number 6, prescription drugs kill large numbers of Americans every single year. Number 7, aspartame is not good for our health, and we reported to you last week that the makers of aspartame now are bringing us Neotame. But number 8 on the list of conspiracy theories about health that the mainstream media has been forced to admit are actually true, that would be that many among the global elite, such as Ted Turner or Bill Gates, want to institute a global one-child policy and want to reduce the world population for the good of the environment. Those are the BioWars EnviroHealth updates, and we get now into History Mystery. And we reported just a few weeks ago for you that Lee Harvey Oswald's coffin was up for auction. But now it's the JFK ambulance up for auction. The ambulance that transported Kennedy from Andrews Air Force Base to Bethesda Naval Hospital. And if you'd like to learn more about what went down in that trip from Dallas to Andrews Air Force Base, to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and what went into the plane, and what came out of the plane, and all the stories that don't match up, you can go, of course, down the JFK rabbit hole. The related story, well, I was going to mention, if you want to learn more about that, I would say check out Dark Legacy from Jack, or rather John Hankey, interviewed recently on CorbettReport.com. Meanwhile, JFK Library opens the largest online digitized presidential archive, fascinating, from ComputerWorld.com. And our last note on History Mystery is a bizarre one that I wish I could read the whole story. Heil Hound, Nazis dogged by mocking mutt. This would be a dog in Finland that apparently its owners had trained or somehow discovered that when they said, Hitler, say Hitler, the dog would raise his paw. Documents have recently been discovered that apparently this pissed the Nazis off to no end. More on that from clicktohouston.com. And we've now made it to the murder and the mayhem. And again, my friends, there's no shortage of the things going on with the mass amounts of events that seem on some level designed to make our head spin. But fortunately, there are good folks out there in the alternative media digging through this information, and we're spread out all around the world, so there's essentially 24/7 coverage coming out all the time. So all the folks in the States, all the folks in the UK, and even folks like Corbett Report in Japan, or folks like Cryptogon.com out of New Zealand. So, coming from Cryptogon.com, Ashley W. Turton, energy lobbyist, wife of key White House aide, dies in a car fire with unusual circumstances. We'll get to that unusual update with after this initial reporting from the Washington Post. The wife of a key White House aide was found dead early Monday in a sports utility vehicle that was heavily damaged by fire in the garage of the couple's Capitol Hill home, sources familiar with the incident said. The cause of her death is uncertain. Ashley W. Turton, T-U-R-T-O-N, 37 years old, an energy company lobbyist and one-time top aide to former U.S. Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, was found dead shortly before 5 a.m. in a burning BMW, the back end of which was partly out of the garage as if the vehicle had been entering or leaving when the fire started. Authorities said Turton was the wife of Daniel A. Turton, 43, the White House's Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs for the U.S. House. As such, he is President Obama's point man on legislation moving through the House. He and Ashley Turton, who have three children, were a Washington power couple well known in Democratic circles. She was a lobbyist for North Carolina-based Progress Energy, which coincidentally announced a major merger with Duke Energy the day before Ashley was found dead in a car with some unusual circumstances. So we'll get that update from Politico. The leading theory is accidental, that the car crashed through the garage doors and was found on fire in the garage area, Peeringer said, adding that the incident is under joint investigation by the fire and police departments. There were some unusual circumstances, just the way the car was, low speed, significant fire, things like that. For the most part, the fire was confined to the area of origin. Some unusual circumstances and another interesting, convenient death. Ashley W. Turton, energy lobbyist, wife of key White House aide, dies in a mysterious car fire after a apparently low-speed crash. But this is why you really got to give it to Cryptogon.com. Following up on the story, another BMW exploded in Arlington, one day and 6 miles away from the Turton car. What's going on in the district of criminals surrounding all around there? As we noted last week, and we're still not getting near the bottom, here's an update on the John P. Wheeler III murder. You know, the biowar expert and ex-Bush official who was found dead in a Delaware landfill on New Year's Day. An update from Female Faust. Wheeler involved in the Barksdale Minot incident. Some of you may know that as the Rogue B-52 story from a few years ago, which again, like so many other things, source back to Darth Cheney. John P. Wheeler III involved in the Barksdale Minot incident. That would be Wheeler, the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force in the George W. Bush administration. It was the Secretary of the Air Force who discovered that Richard Cheney had set up an alternative chain of command to the nuclear weapons wing of the Air Force. In the process, six Minuteman missiles armed with nuclear warheads were secretly transported from Minot Air Force Base to Barksdale Air Force Base. The latter is the chief staging base for the Middle East War. The note is the missiles were advanced cruise missiles, not ACMs, not Minutemen. Another interesting connection tying in with John P. Wheeler. So, just as we've noted in so many of these other cases, the initial story may be the fantastical one, may be the sad human interest angle, whether that's John Wheeler wandering around like a disheveled homeless man carrying his shoe, or even the story of Giffords, that being the angle focused upon, and others bringing up the questions surrounding Judge John Roll as the possible main target. But again, we addressed all of that in the first hour of this episode 201, and we can't get back into it now, my friends. We must further down the news purge for our Obamasiah updates. An undivided State of the Union. Look out for a mixed seating stunt for the upcoming January 27th State of the Union speech. More on that from Washington Post, The Fix, and CBS News. Again, partisan rambling, and you know, longtime listeners, we take no sides in the phony left-right political paradigm. What will we see? So many things swirling around. But as we continue through our other related Obamasiah updates, again, just planting that seed in the meme that's already going to start to grow on the mixed seating stunt coming up January 27th. Meanwhile, Rom Bozo's brother Zeke has left the White House too. All the rats leaving the ship. Robert Gibbs, the press secretary, he's out. Rahm Emanuel, he's out. Jim Jones, he's out. You got to change the birdcage liner. They can only take on so much crap before they're unbelievable and ineffective as frontmen and pawns and the actors on the stage for us. Because, of course, you know, the shell game and the gangsterism of Chicagoland is in full swing now that Obama's brought in a Daley to be his new chief of staff. Meanwhile, Rahm is going to Chicago to elbow his way in, and that'll be the least of it if we're lucky. He may have to stab tables and make threats of dead, 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 and he may have to send people fish, but, you know, that's how gangsters roll. Whoops, the new Oklahoma governor swears to offend the Constitution, which, of course, would remind us of the flashback to Obama's first day and the second oath, going back 2 years. Our last Obamasiah update: Associated Press settles copyright lawsuit against Shepherd Fairey. Shepherd Fairey was originally known for provocative street art with Andre the Giant, but has since gotten into hagiography, iconography. Call it what you want. You can learn more about him in Exit Through the Gift Shop, the documentary by and ostensibly about the mysterious street artist known as Banksy. But Shepherd Fairey of the Andre the Giant has a posse fame. He's the one who did the artistic rendering of an Associated Press photo into the iconic Hope poster during the campaign. They've battled it out and they finally settled. Now, lastly, on this news purge, good clean fun for the whole damn family, we get to our War Horrors updates. Despite media headlines, my friends, Pentagon spending is up, not down. The Department of Defense budget is not going down, regardless of the recent talk by Gates trumpeting $78 billion in military cuts over 5 years. Yes, Gates plans to trim spending in some areas and even eliminate certain weapons programs, but the Pentagon budget will continue to rise as it has over the past two decades, which contained both phony progressive puppets and fake conservative puppets. The next defense budget is projected to grow by 3%. Damn that inflation from money printed out of thin air as debt instantly. The next defense budget is projected to grow by 3% to $553 billion, money that does not include the cost of military operations in Afghan-Iraq. By 2015, the budget will eclipse $620 billion. After that, it may stop growing if the government sticks to its current long-term plan and withdraws as planned from Afghanistan, which would allow the Defense Secretary to reduce the size of the U.S. Army and Marine Corps. It should be noted that the fiscal blueprint for the Pentagon has gone up every year since 1998. Despite talk of cuts, Pentagon spending still going up, but somehow, gosh, sorry about your job. Sorry about your home. Sorry about your foreclosure. Sorry about your whole city being ruined because international gangsters moved your jobs overseas. And of course, you know, we'd love to pay for, you know, your health. As if a rat's ass was given about you. We could pay for all that in a pittance. But no, the military war machine must roll on, fueled by terror juice and paranoia and wars of aggression in countries that it somehow turns out later was all about the drugs and the resources and God, gold, oil, and drugs. Our second War Horse headline, also from allgov.com, Lockheed Martin reaches deeply into the U.S. government. Of course, it's a nice, pretty little revolving door. But our final War Horse note and our final headline on this news purge and our final story on this 201st episode of MediaMonarchy.com, Theater of War to play at Pentagon, another Afghanistan marathon, 7 hours of plays. The Tricycle, or Tricycle, Theater will present two special performances of The Great Game, Afghanistan. It's a 7-hour marathon of short plays about Afghan's history of foreign occupations for the Pentagon on February 10th and 11th, the theater announced. The performances will take place at the Shakespeare Theater Company in Washington for an audience of military and government officials, service members, veterans, and their families. The Great Game, a cycle of plays commissioned from a dozen writers, opened in London in 2009 and has been touring the United States since August. The company did a similar private performance for Britain's Ministry of Defense in July, and a news release from the theater quoted the country's top military commander, General Sir David Richards, as saying that if he had seen the plays before he went to Afghanistan in 2005, it, quote, would have made me a much better commander, end quote, of the International Security Forces. Ben Brantley, in a positive review of the production last month for the New York Times, said that after watching the 7-hour cycle, audience members can be forgiven for thinking of Afghanistan as something Samuel Beckett, in a really down mood, might have come up with. I suppose ending this show on the idea that theater and the arts can make you a better person, now in this case making you a better military commander, I don't really want to touch that one. I just enjoy the amusing intersection when it's called, as it is, The Great Game, and they talk about the history of political, or rather, occupational military pursuits in Afghanistan, and of course, that's something that the aforementioned Robert Gates would know quite a bit about, because of course, he and Brzezinski and the intelligence agencies were involved in Afghanistan in the late 1970s. Not reacting to the Soviets' invasion, as Brzezinski admitted in an interview with La Nouvelle Observateur, we went there first to provocatively draw them in. I can't quote it exactly off the top of my head, but just look up ZBIG, La Nouvelle Observateur, Soviet Union, Afghanistan, giving them their Vietnam. And that's why they call it the Great Game, and that's why people like Brzezinski call it the Grand Chessboard. That's going to do it, my friends. Again, I thank all the folks out there who are trying to get involved and get activated and help send information and help spread the word about this show. I appreciate it. You can, of course, get in touch, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, and we will keep going and growing. This has been the 201st episode, my friends, of Media Monarchy. It's Friday the 14th, January 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation, or mail media to the Monarchy, at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.